A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to the 158th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Jason Apple. I'm Matt Enloe.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have Luke Corum and Bradley Jackson, the director and producer of the new Showtime show Action, which is a docuseries about sports betting. And we are very excited because this is the second time they've been on. They were on episode 77, and they had a documentary called Dealt about a blind magician that is like so good.
Yeah, it's a favorite episode of ours, and so it was really a treat to get an email from them to hear about how they've got this cool new Showtime show that's airing as we speak. The finale will be airing this Sunday if you're just listening this week, but they're all available on the app on Showtime right now.
Yeah, so it's a really good conversation about how you go from a feature doc, which is really something that you make for yourself, to a docu-series, which is really something where you're catering to a network and a brand and all these other people that you have to make happy. And I mean, they're both just like really fun to talk to.
Yeah, so I think such great guys.
You'll really get a lot out of this episode.
Yeah, so before we hop into that conversation with them, Oren.
Yes.
What have you been working on lately?
A lot, actually. And this time it's for real. I always say a lot, but
usually, you're lying.
It's not that I'm lying. It's usually like I'm shooting one thing and I'm writing another thing and I'm pitching another thing and I'm meeting with another person. But this time it's actually...
You're shooting nonstop. Yeah, you're on a heater. Yeah. How many spots have you shot in the last month and a half?
Four, which doesn't sound like that much, but I don't know.
Four different clients, four different production teams, four different PPMs, and, you know, the whole shebang.
Actually, one of them I haven't shot yet. I was supposed to shoot on Friday, but we just pushed it to Monday because of rain. Your crew, who's doing a lot of other commercials too, it's hard to get them to move like 3 days later.
Yeah.
And the permits and all the equipment. And yeah, it's a...
How much do you think it costs to move the day? Like, you must have eaten some costs.
Yeah, probably like 10, 15 grand, I imagine, like the whole thing.
Yeah, pretty rough. Yeah.
Redoing permits, redoing posting, like redoing, you know, we're filming in a residential neighborhood, and we have to have permission from every single house around us to block their driveways. Because even though we're only filming these two specific houses, all the houses behind us are going to be very inconvenienced by our presence there. We have cops shutting down the streets and casting and auditions. Like, some of the actors we cast might not be available, so we have to like get our casting director on for another day and reshop, and I don't know. That's a whole thing.
Yeah. Sounds like a real pain in the butt.
Yeah. But so one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is this idea that when you're working on a commercial, and I'm sure it happens on TV and film too a lot, you're not supposed to post photos from set on social media.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that with anything. Yeah, for sure.
Well, if you're making an indie film or you're making your own short. Or
yeah, if you have complete control, yeah, definitely. But like, if you're on a TV show, you're not supposed to post any of those photos.
Right. I'm having this problem where I'm shooting all this stuff and I'm taking all these great photos on set, but I feel like I can't post them. Like, I just did a commercial last week where I just took a picture of like some of our equipment and I put it on Instagram, and even that I was like, and I didn't say anything about it. It was literally, here's some lights.
I think, unfortunately, for better or for worse, you get a little bit of director privilege on that stuff.
I feel like you post a lot of pictures from set.
Yeah, I'm very thoughtful about not posting them if they reveal something. And I also am abusing the power of being a director. And also, I oftentimes will wait until things have already been posted. That's really the move. It's just bank them.
Well, right. Know? But so that's why I like start bugging people. Part of our job, whether we like it or not, is to remind people that we are directors and shooting things. But by the time my things come out, I've usually like forgotten about it. So I've been really bad about it. So I don't know. That's the thing I'm trying to navigate right
now. You're obsessed with it.
Since I've been really busy lately, I haven't had a lot of time to like focus on social media, but I think after my next shoot, I'm going to have like a little break. And I was like, maybe I'll just spend this week like kind of talking about what I've been doing on Facebook and Instagram. I don't know. Maybe it's all worthless. Maybe it's dumb. But I just do feel like that it's just part of our jobs nowadays to like remind people that, you know, someone might happen to see that you just filmed something with a cat and they're like, oh, we have a cat thing coming up. Oh, yeah, we should call Matt up.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's also something that people elect into. I sent a couple like, hey, remember me emails today. Just a couple. Shifting focus a little bit. I was thinking today, because I was kind of, I had a super busy beginning of the year. And I'm kind of like gearing up to be busy again. The other day, it was a beautiful spring day. It's been incredible in Los Angeles lately. I was like, I just want to fucking goof off. I'm not going to work. I'm a freelancer. I'm giving myself the day off. And I immediately was like, I don't know what to do with myself. Like, it used to be when I wasn't creating full time that when it was time to like take a day off, I'd be like, awesome, I get to write. What a treat. And now it's like, I'm like, I don't know how to have fun outside of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially in the middle of the workday, you know, it's not like I can call friends up.
Yeah. I guess for me, if I was in that situation, I would, well, I'd probably, yeah, call up like someone and have lunch, like just schedule a lunch with someone.
Right. But isn't that work?
I mean, it's fun. I think you can do work that's like really fun on your days off, like hang out with someone, or you could like take your phone and go to Griffith Observatory and take some cool photos or whatever.
Right. All I'm saying, I was not in the mood to work.
But that's not, it's like getting inspired is not work, right? Like
it can be. It can be. I guess what I'm saying is that it's rare for me to have this feeling, but I was like, I don't want to think about or ideate or research in any way.
Another thing you can do,
purely fun.
Well, I don't know if this is fun, but you can like for me, I can like organize my garage or like,
yeah,
you know, do something that I've been meaning to do forever, but I just have been putting off for years.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. It's, you know, I have a kid, so the whole thing is like there's an unlimited amount of cleaning I could do.
Sure, sure. Or you could just be like, well, I guess I'm taking my kid to the park. Like I'm going to watch my kid slide down a slide for half an hour.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because so my kid is in school from like 9 to 5-ish. That is my time. Like if I was going to goof off or do something for myself, it would be between those times.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I don't think that I would like drive to Malibu. And one thing that I have wanted to do that I have not had time to do forever is just like go buy some clothes. Like I like just literally just go to like
Target.
The Gap or like.
Yeah, yeah. Same difference.
J. Crew. I mean, just like basics. The most generic clothing you can get. Today is not as colorful, but last time
I was wearing that Palm Springs shirt. A full-on Hawaiian shirt. Yeah. Yeah, that'll be up on Instagram.
Yeah.
What do you think? Too much, right?
No, I don't think it's too much at all. I thought it was kind of cool, but coming from a person that's a dad, that's not a good compliment. If I think it's kind of cool, there's a chance that it's getting a little old.
Should I wear it with a trucker
hat? Yeah. You should, for sure.
Well, Oren.
That actually would probably make it pretty cool.
On that note, good to catch up, Oren. Let's talk about our Patreon page.
Yeah, so Patreon is a way that you can show some support for the podcast if you listen to it, if you feel like you've gotten anything out of it, if it's helped you sell a show or pitch something, or if, you know, it just kind of keeps you occupied while you're doing yard work in your house.
Yeah, it's an easy way to once a month say, hey, thanks, and also support the growth of the show. We've been spending a lot of extra money on advertising lately, which has been going pretty well. So the community's getting bigger. It's kind of, we're at that inflection point where word of mouth is still valuable, of course, but you know, you kind of have to start stepping outside of your sphere of influence, you know, like it can't just be friends of friends of friends. So the other way you can help us is by rating us on iTunes or telling your friends about the show, you know, because that's how I always learn about podcasts.
So. Yeah, I feel like we are in this new era of podcasts that's changed since we started this podcast where, like, even if I go to iTunes, there's, like, 100 podcasts on the front page that seem interesting.
That are
all
awesome. Yeah.
Celebrity driven. They're all
yeah.
or a interesting true crime story or this thing or really a deep dive
or everything.
Deep dive into starting a business or whatever it is. And I'm like, I honestly do not know what to listen to. And I now only listen to recommended to podcasts that have been recommended by someone else.
We're living peak podcast. So help our show out a little bit. We really appreciate it. Throw us a couple bucks over at Patreon or drop us an iTunes review.
And the Patreon is patreon.com/justshootitpod.
And you can always go to iTunes to drop that review. Shoot us an email at justshootitpod. Ask for some stickers. I'll mail you some.
justshootitpod@gmail.com. Okay, let's talk to Luke and Bradley. We're here with Luke and Bradley of Action.
Yeah.
A new sex documentary.
Actually, I was worried about that when the key art came out. I was like, can we make sure it says sports gambling?
Sports gambling, please. Yeah. You guys are back. You were all the way back. You were guests on episode 77 with your movie Dealt, which is about a year and a half ago. And you're back.
I mean, obviously, you guys knew that that movie was like good at the time. But I can't tell you how many times since you guys were on the podcast, people have mentioned like, oh, this, you know, this movie Dealt that's so good. Like people even outside of the film industry.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I mean, I have a few friends that were kind of like Magic fans and they've yeah. like all seen it. And I was like, why have we had those guys on my podcast? Clearly, you don't listen to my podcast because you would have known.
You don't talk about
so
magic.
For those of you yeah. out there are listening, have not seen it. It's about one of the world's greatest card magicians who is completely blind. It is a must see documentary.
I think were they on our podcast first or Abby Fuller? Do you remember?
I think Abby was first.
Okay. Because Abby, before we had Abby on, I was like, I don't know if I want to have like doc people on. Like, what are we going to talk about? Like how they happened to find some story?
we're people too.
But then we had Abby on and then we had you guys on. I was like, oh, I don't want to have non-doc people on anymore.
That's right. Well, we don't see ourselves as doc filmmakers.
Really?
We see ourselves as filmmakers. We're making a movie. We're not making a documentary.
There you go.
We're making a movie.
Is that really something?
No, genuinely, when we were making Dealt, Luke printed out this piece of paper that said, like, you're not making a documentary, you're making cinema. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how that's kind of our ethos. That's kind of our, like, our
yeah, and was that related to, like, your, like, visual approach?
Both, everything. Everything. I think the moment you start thinking you're making a documentary, it's like, okay, I'm a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there are those types of documentaries. Yeah. It's not something that necessarily we're interested in doing. Action has a little more journalism to it, actually, than Dealt did. But you want to think about the conflict and the character arcs and, like, what's that next turn and visually approach, too. Because the moment you just think of it as a documentary, I think but today people are more accepting of what documentary means. But
sure.
10 years ago, you would just see it more as something like, oh, it's a journalistic piece, not right. cinema.
Well, yeah, it's something that... Sorry to bring Abby Fuller up so many times, but she directs Chef's
episode
Table.
Episode number 34. I just checked.
Cool. Oh, wow.
And she talked about how she had told us about an episode she directed about a chef that had grown up as a gang member, like in some involved like with the mob or something. And how when she filmed her episode about him, she wanted to like kind of evoke like those shots you saw in The Godfather and like these Scorsese films and like kind of like shoot it visually, tell the story from like that kind of mob type of angle. And it seemed really cinematic to me to tell the story of like do a profile on a chef, you know.
Yeah, it did sort of open our eyes up just in terms of also like realizing that you're setting the entire scene, right? You know, it wasn't just like she was following him around as he was cooking. She was like, no, I'm gonna pick the location, I'm gonna like dress him and like light it and decide exactly how I want everything to look, just like cinema.
The company we partner with, Boardwalk Pictures, actually, they partnered with David Gelb to create Chef's Table. Mm-hmm. And when I was picking the DP for the series, started looking at some of the DPs for Chef's Table. That's why documentary is so unique. It's like, it's not just one type of filmmaking. So with Chef's Table, it's more like you're lighting everything and you're setting it out, you know, exactly the type of... like you can dress people, like everything is lit like a narrative, like a movie set. And that's how it's done with Action and with other docs that we've done. It's more like fly in the wall approach, but you go in it with the mindset of like, we actually scout the locations ahead of time, mm-hmm. but we don't have control where that person's going to walk or what they're going to do. But at least we know where we're going and we know what kind of lenses to choose. And we know like the atmosphere we're getting in. Can we afford to just use primes? Can we do a zoom? So like we can do those choices, but it's not like a movie where we're lighting it. Mm-hmm. So but I think with docs, there's a big range.
There's a spectrum. There. Yes. Yeah, sure.
But would you ever say to... like when you're not doing a talking head interview, when you're doing, when you're catching like more of the fly on the wall approach, would you ever tell your subject like, hey, can you guys have that conversation over here? Like yes. under that light or in this hallway or whatever?
Yes. Yeah.
Like kind of push, like kind of corral them into like a place that where you can actually shoot them.
When appropriate, yeah. I think you have to read the scene. Mm-hmm. If there's something that's happening spontaneous, it doesn't matter what it looks like.
Right. Just kind of hands off, let
you
it
just
happen.
Let it go.
They've forgotten you're there, basically.
Yes. You cannot recreate a moment.
Well, what if their lav mic falls down and there is a moment?
Because sound is pretty important. You let it go. Sometimes it depends on the moment. You just have to know, like, what's like, can I get interfere or not? That's just a feel thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, to be completely honest, I'll be like, so can y'all talk about it again?
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
And I'll just prompt him with a question and then just back off.
I loved how you brought this up. Give me that one more time. Yeah.
So we should probably back up for a second and tell people what Action is.
This is a 4-part documentary series about the world of sports betting told through the eyes of characters who live it. Sports betting is something that in the United States just became legal about a year ago. Similar to marijuana, the Supreme Court said it's up to the states to decide. Mm-hmm. For years and years, it's only been in Nevada, and it's a $500 billion illegal industry that is now becoming legal. And to be honest, I knew very little about sports betting, as did Bradley going into this. Mm-hmm. But we find characters fascinating, mm-hmm. and this world has incredibly fascinating characters. So we compared it to The Big Short, where you're going to this world that's kind of complicated, but where you can bring and ease people into it and keep them engaged through the eyes of the characters that are immersed in that world, which is a very unpredictable and roller coaster type of world.
So I want to get into the characters in a second, but I think that's kind of interesting. Neither of you guys were into sports betting at all. So how did this project come to be then?
So how it came to be was I was talking with Boardwalk. They had seen Delt. Mm-hmm. The doc we were just talking about that we just made.
And Boardwalk is a production company.
Boardwalk's a production company. They've known for doing Last Chance U, Chef's Table, doing premium doc series. They watched Delt and they said, this is fantastic. They brought me in their office.
How did they see Delt? Did you send it to them?
This is Russell Groves, who was another producer on Delt. Mm-hmm. He was friends.
Also a producer on Action.
He knew someone at Boardwalk.
Oh, we're done.
Said, hey, you need to bring Luke in. You need to watch this doc Delt. They watched it and like, okay, bring Luke in. So they came in and they sat me down and they said, we love this. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. We find filmmakers we want to make something with, and we want to make something with you. That's how the meeting went. It wasn't like the general water bottle sit on the couch thing. Like literally I walked out going, oh, that was one of the best meetings I've had. And I came back to Bradley and I was like, cause I was staying at their house. I was sleeping on a couch and I was like, that was a great freaking meeting.
Was that in LA?
Yes, in LA.
And it was about a year ago.
Dude, like, and it took off. Like, it was in no time did this show. So basically, we were pitching ideas. Every other week, mm-hmm. I threw them an idea. And that went on for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then finally, they came to me with the idea of sports betting. The first time I said, I don't think so, because I just didn't, I wanted to make some like people.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they came back again. They said, sports betting. And I was like, let me get back to you. And then I was like, whoa. If you wake up every day and you don't know if you're going to make or lose money, there's a lot of conflict in your life.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Well, so, and if your financial windfall is based on somebody you don't know who's in their 20s shooting a ball and mm-hmm. it going into a hoop, that's like that's an insane way to live, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So we just started researching it, and I was like, and I kicked some stuff to Bradley, and he thought it was interesting too, and I started putting together a pitch packet with Boardwalk, but then I started doing research and found out that like the Supreme Court had a ruling coming up where it might change the law. And I knew from pitching, I'd only been out one time pitching before to networks. The two things they ask, why you, mm-hmm. why now?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This was the why now.
Right. Yeah.
And as soon as the ruling hit, I called up my contact at Boardwalk and I was like, dude, check it out. And he was like, okay, now. And within 2 weeks, we had a pitch deck put together. And this is where relationships come to be. We Delt premiered at South By, and the head of documentary films was at South By and wanted
for Showtime.
Showtime wanted to buy Delt. In the end, we sold it to IFC, but that guy, he and I stayed in contact for like a year. And we went to dinner, drinks, and he was like...
Took him to the Magic Castle.
Sure, really wined and dined the thing. Yeah. So the guy said, bring me something when you got something good at Showtime. So I told Boardwalk, this is the guy. And I knew that Showtime with sports, they have a huge sports audience.
Right.
And can I ask, what is... Like, you know the Showtime guy. You were pitching all these ideas to Boardwalk. Why not just pitch those ideas straight
to
Showtime?
Because you don't do that to an executive. You don't just... email an executive with ideas you have on a whim, especially when you're not like a known commodity. Right now, having done something with that network, I'd feel more comfortable saying I have the next idea.
But you felt better about partnering with a company that has a track record.
For sure.
To take it out.
For sure. I mean,
that's... Is Boardwalk part of the answer to why you?
Yes. That's a great, great question. Yes, absolutely. Because a network looks at you and they're more familiar with me, actually, than Boardwalk. They knew Boardwalk, but they were friends with me, or at least this guy in the room was. But they know what Boardwalk does.
Sure. They can look at that list and be like, oh, okay, we get it.
So they're like, yes,
premium documentary.
They can look at you and go, oh, you're a good director. Right. How do we know you can execute on a series? Oh, you're partnering with a company that's done series. Okay.
But also, I feel like there's this thing in Hollywood where it's like, I think you're a good director, but I would like somebody else to vouch for you as well.
That's what agents are too, right?
Right. And so when Boardwalk's like, yeah, we made Chef's Table, we made Last Chance You, we made all these amazing shows, and we think that, you know, Luke 100%. And Bradley should make another show
100%
with us, then that makes the Showtime guy be like, see, I told you so, right?
Yeah. I mean, we pitched it to him, and we had a green light within a week.
Yeah.
Which is an insane, like, turnaround.
So. I think the other thing to point out in this story is that these are relationships that are, you know, a year and a half old, right? Like, South By, well, it was probably 2 years ago, basically, right?
Yeah. 2017, right? Yeah.
So, it's easy to hear some Hollywood fancy guy be like, yeah, hit me back when you got something good, right? You know, it's an easy, a different person would think of that as being blown off and just never follow up ever again, right? And Boardwalk sits you down and you send them ideas for 6 months and they say no, they send you one that you don't like, you say no, and then they send you that again. That again, it would be easy to be like, all right, this isn't going to happen, right? So it's that perseverance that is part of what made this thing a runaway success.
I always tell people, it's like, I think this industry is... there's so many talented people, but it's how hard you're willing to work and then who you know and where you cultivate those relationships. I didn't go back to the guy at Showtime with five different ideas. This was, I think I went to him with one other prior to this one. I think you need to reserve those silver bullets.
Sure.
When you get someone who's high up, do not bother them. When you get someone who's important, do not talk to them again unless you have something. And then they're just impress them and then walk away. And they're like, ooh.
Yeah.
I know when I hear that person and get an email, I know it's something good.
It's something good. So you said you had a green light in half-assed? 2 weeks, you said?
It was a week. 3 days in offer.
Yeah.
And then
rock and roll.
We were on a plane. And then what happened was, here's how it all went fast. They said, we want the show. And then I went to Boardwalk. And we thought we had a year, like a normal series. And then they said... Showtime called us back and was like, so we won it shortly after the Super Bowl, which would give us about 6.5 months.
Because the general concept of the idea of the show was that we're going to follow all these gamblers, the sports bettors, but we're going to follow them through the course of the NFL season, right? And so I think Showtime originally, they kind of thought in the back of their mind, like, we've done the research. When you do shows about sports and you do it about a specific sport, you can't go longer than a couple months when that season ends. So football ends early February. Our original deadline.
Thank you for letting me know. That's
helpful. you know what football is, right?
Barely.
Throw a ball. Somebody catches it.
Barely.
Yeah. People get concussions.
Yeah.
That's all I know, too.
Exactly.
But yeah, the original deadline was kind of June. Like, right, June, July, I guess is what they're saying. And then... they realized, oh, wait, that's way too long after football season. So they said, how about late February, early March? And in the back of our mind, we were thinking, We did Delt. This movie was 85 minutes long, and it took us 4 years, more or less. Now you want
Wait, really
to do...
you were filming with him for 4 years?
Well, three and a half.
Yeah.
Remember, like, you guys kind of, you thought you would be done, and then you were like, wait, we need to keep going.
And the previous doc we did, it's 4 years. Delt was 3 years. Four years. So we're coming off of 7 years making two movies.
Two 85 movies.
And you're basically
movies.
Asking us to make four in 6 months.
Hopefully I'm not jumping into this too fast, but I guess it's part of the way you approach that is saying, instead of following one person, we're going to follow five people.
In the original pitch, it was a chorus. That was the pitch. I mean, the pitch was a chorus of people throughout the course of the NFL season tracking the new legalization. You're going to go through the highs and lows. Mm-hmm. You're going to see people betting, losing, winning. You're going to see how gambling affects people's lives. Mm-hmm. And then, like The Big Short, we're going to explain to people what the hell betting is, because they told us, by the way, soon after we sold the show, we're going to give you the slot right before our biggest show on network, Billions. So we want this to be for everybody, not sports people.
Right.
Which
right.
we were happy to hear, because only is a good time slot. We didn't want this to be about just sports.
Right.
We wanted it to be for everybody, because we weren't even into sports betting.
Right.
I mean, I didn't really say that in the room, but like.
Sure. But you know what I mean? Yeah. You want it to be appealing to a larger audience.
Like a human drama. Like
The Big Short. I think The Big Short was our go-to. It's like, look at what this movie did.
Yeah.
That's why that movie took so long to get made, probably.
Sure.
It's because, like, who wants to make some other financial crash? Like, who's going to watch that?
Yeah, right.
But if Gosling's in it, I would watch it.
Sure. And we didn't have Gosling and Pitt and all that. Sure.
Like, right. Well, Gosling was interested, but the negotiations got a lot.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You guys walked away. It's. We'll talk about that.
Something that Luke hasn't mentioned yet, which I think is, again, another insane part of this process was, the pitch, none of the characters were signed on the dotted line. Like, of all the people that you mentioned in the pitch, correct me if I'm wrong, only one character ended up making it into the actual show.
Correct.
And we didn't know any of these characters.
Right.
Yeah. We had nobody attached, no locations. So when they told us you have 6 months,
you're starting from scratch.
I mean, that wasn't even like. That's including pre-production.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what do you mean you had no locations? Like, do you usually...
We didn't know casinos don't allow you to go put your freaking camera in there.
Yeah.
Right, I was
This is an industry that's taboo, that one knows about. No one lets you in. I mean, have you been in a casino, how many cameras they have on the ceiling?
Sure.
They're so freaking protective.
And every casino is owned by a corporation that's owned by a corporation, pretty much. So it's like the red tape is...
There's not like a mom and pop casino to go to. Yeah.
There's one.
Yeah.
We found one.
We found one, and we filmed in it a lot.
North Coast?
Is that South Point.
South Point. Okay.
So, shout out to South Point. Amazing place. Kind of gross, but amazing nonetheless. If you want to smell like disinfectant and cigarette smoke, spend 10 days at the South Point.
To be fair, that's true for Las Vegas, the city.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I thought it was interesting, at least in the series, you say that like people on the East Coast are like really into gambling. Mm-hmm. Relative to people on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, gambling's huge everywhere, but in the East Coast, it's a different thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a different mindset. It's a different culture. And also, you don't have great weather.
Uh-huh, sure.
You know what I mean? And they're very sports-centric, because it's these big cities, and you got like big football teams and not much to do outside.
And hundreds of years of history that we don't really have out here in the Southwest.
And there's a lot of mafia, which is why we got a bookie in the show. I mean, it's just like a different animal.
Yeah. I want to go back just a second to talk a tiny bit more about the pitch, because you guys were saying that you had characters in mind, right? You had people in mind, but you didn't have any relationships yet. When you're going in to present a documentary series, are you outlining, hey, this is Kelly from Vegas and, you know, Vegas Dave, and these are the types of people that we're looking for, even if we don't have them yet?
Yeah, we had a pitch deck that outlined the characters.
How many characters?
But real world characters, not archetypes.
Correct.
Gotcha.
But we also kept it kind of vague. And this is something Brandon and I were talking about recently, is he was looking back at the pitch deck, and he was like, when you look at the pitch deck, it's really not that specific. And I thought that was a really great point Bradley made, because it's not that specific. Apart from the characters on the page, the pitch deck is actually quite broad.
Mm-hmm. But that's every pitch, right?
But it doesn't... The pitch, I'll just say this, the pitch was not rehearsed. I went over it one time prior to going in the room. Once. It was basically, here's the idea. Luke's going to tell you about it. I talked for like 12 minutes.
Wow.
And then we walked out of the room. And by the end of the pitch, the guy said, this is probably exactly what we want. And it was, but I also.
And it was just the two of you?
I was not in on the pitch. It was Luke and the two guys from Boardwalk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somebody from WME, I think.
Yeah.
Right. But to be fair, I'm gonna butter Luke's bread a little bit. As you can tell over the microphone, Luke is very, very good. He's a very good pitcher. Mm-hmm. He's very good. He's a very good interview. So he's a great doc filmmaker. But I think Luke presents things just very matter-of-factly. Mm-hmm. Luke is very good at pitching. Before he went in to the Showtime pitch, he literally he did it for me, and I kind of play-acted like I was a studio exec mm-hmm. who didn't know what was going on. You remember this? It was pretty fun because I kind of knew a little bit about...
You're on your phone a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You're running 10 minutes behind.
Yeah, exactly. I had somebody walk in and hand me a note, and I was like, oh, I'm going to call him back.
Yeah, yeah, perfect.
But I kind of would, like, I would... Because I've been in a couple pitches myself, and, like, just because you have a great story, or even if you have a great script... does not mean you can sell a pitch.
Sure.
Which yeah. I think in my mind, we were talking about this on the way over here, pitching I think is the hardest thing to do in this industry.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe it's less important than we think. Like I think that you had a yes, you had a half a yes before you walked in the door.
Do you I wouldn't say mean? That actually, I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't think so? Okay.
Because I actually pitched this guy one other idea
uh-huh.
about 6 months prior.
I was in on that pitch too.
Yeah. And it went well.
Sure.
But I could tell, yeah, that didn't hit.
Right,
It's all about like...
But do you think it was the idea or the pitch?
Oh, it's totally the idea.
Yeah.
And all in the network.
It was about magic.
And we had several people that wanted to hear it. Some of them were pretty good. Some of them didn't. Mm-hmm. And that was a great experience to go through that. This one felt totally different. But I also say this. Let me just say this. We went to another... I'm not going to say who. We went to another network. And this just happens to everybody. It was the worst freaking... Okay, no. We only decided to do 3 pitches. 3. Because Boardwalk's pretty respected, so they're like, we're not going to go sure. all over town with
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
One of them, the guy was falling asleep at the table. And I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. Why are we even doing this? But you just get it out, and you mm-hmm. go, I'm just going to...
A warm-up run.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just like, whatever. Just going to do it, and I'm going to save this up for the next one. Mm-hmm. Then we did the Showtime one, which was... awesome. And I was like, oh, I think we just freaking sold that. And we did one other one where like, who we did 4. Yeah, it might have been 4 total. And we did one other one that same day where two people, it's for 2. One of them wasn't in the room. One of them walks in halfway through and is like, oh, just keep going. And I was like, God.
Yeah.
So I think it's about like, I knew Showtime, it fits their brand.
Right.
You have to find someone that fits their brand.
And that's what I'm getting at. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
It's like the idea is right. You have the right track record. You're with the right company. You're vouched for. So like that, those are the things that you have to have lined up.
I agree with you on that. Okay, yes.
Before you even walk in and hit it out of the park. You still have to
but
hit it out of
the
park.
But then the pitch has to be good.
I will say, I've been on the other side a couple times where the pitch wasn't so good and we still bought it.
Oh, interesting.
Because we want it, because of all of those other things.
Right, right.
You know, if the script is really great and they're not great in the room, or they're great in the room and the script is bad, there are a couple ways around it a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that each network and each format, we'll say, has its own list of qualifications, right? And you just had all of them right there. You know what I mean? Like, of course, this was a perfect fit for Showtime. And you kind of knew it going in. And you also knew it walking out, right?
Yeah.
You knew you sold the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he,
when you know, you know. Right?
Yeah,
when
it's he, very true. It's very true.
When you told me the reaction after the pitch, I was like, "There's, I mean, you never know, obviously, but I was just like, the show is going to sell. Like, it just felt like it would.
Which was a good feeling. Because I'll tell you another lesson from this was, it was my wife was newly pregnant.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And a good friend of ours told me this quote. We were talking about... like the pressures of filmmaking and growing up. And he said that Coppola, when he was making The Godfather, which was a big risk at the time, and he didn't know, and I'm not comparing this to freaking
sure.
Coppola,
yeah.
but just a great lesson to learn. He was making Godfather and like no idea if this thing was going to work out. And then as a lot of great things you learn about, like there was a lot of doubt behind it.
Right. Well, it was based on these like real pulpy novels,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And he had a family at the time, new family, and he said you want to know if you can make it as a filmmaker, start a family.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the truth. I was a little bit worried about pitching something on something that was not something that I had a connection to immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember telling my wife when I was researching, I was like, okay, I was like looking at, okay, I know why now, because of the ruling of the Supreme Court. It's a sexy subject, has tons of conflict, cool characters. Oh my God, I think this could sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her, I was like, but I don't know like much about the world necessarily. Yeah. And she goes, you'll figure it out. And I was like, okay. And it gave me all the confidence. I was like, you're going to freaking figure this out.
Yeah.
And I think what we did is we just made it our own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think when we went in the room, you could take this a million different ways. You could do the Alex Gibney approach
mm-hmm.
and totally do investigative, mm-hmm. which would be super cool probably. But we were just like, Bradley and I love characters. Right. So it was like, how do we make it character-centric, make it our own, and get us excited about it?
Right.
And then we were excited about it, and it worked.
And I think that's, we talk about this in pitching, like with commercials too. It's like, you can get the worst script ever and the worst concept, but you have to find that thing that makes you excited about shooting it.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
that's why when you pitch it and then you don't get the job, you're like really bummed, even though you hated the script in the beginning.
Yeah, you found a way to love it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So you convince yourself that you get really into it.
You feel dumb for falling in love with a concept about selling, you know, medical insurance or something.
Right. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I did, you know, my first movie was about this deaf UFC fighter that had been a wrestler, and I knew nothing about UFC, nothing about wrestling, and nothing about like the deaf world or deaf people or sign language or any of that stuff. And I had a lot of that same like self-doubt of like, why am I telling this story? But I think if you're like the type of person like you guys, like we all are, that is just really interested in people,
curious.
That's kind of all you need to have. And it's like, I think there's this illusion that there's these other people that are better fits for everything.
True.
But like, you just can't really think about that.
Yeah.
Or worry about it.
So how did you guys find these incredible characters?
So yeah, so the show was sold, and then we were more or less on a plane to Vegas. I think it was September 1 was like mm-hmm. we got on a plane to Vegas. And at that time, we had been paired up with a showrunner, mm-hmm. a guy named Dave Check. Dave ran MLB Films for like 17 years. Wow. And when he was like 25, he co-wrote and produced Come Fly With Me with Michael Jordan.
Uh-huh.
And so he was kind of a legend in the sports world, sports film and entertainment world. And
he's making a show right now with Soderbergh on Starz.
Yeah.
So, cool. And Boardwalk found him for you? Or
yeah, Boardwalk came to me and was like, hey, we need it. The network wants a showrunner, which was new to me. I thought they were trying to like, you know, you're not good enough. But they're like, no, Luke, like, it's just kind of required.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You have to have a showrunner that's approved. It's just part of the deal. It's like,
sure.
Okay. And talked to this guy on the phone. I was like, oh, he's going to be amazing.
He's
great. He's salt of the earth. Wonderful guy.
And it was definitely like, I mean, like Luke and I, we have a lot of experience, but we've never made a 4-hour documentary series in 6 months.
Sure. With like network deliverables and notes and rushes and kind of all, there's a whole other beast to it when you're not, you know, self-employed essentially.
Right? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. Yes.
And that idea that you talked about earlier of like, there's a brand that's Showtime. Like this show is going to lead into billions and needs to appeal to those same people. And in a way that with Delt, you probably just made it for yourself.
Exactly.
Yep.
And Delt was just one character. And we knew going into Delt, this guy's already fascinating. He's a blind card magician who's a black belt in karate. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, we got on a plane to Vegas on September 1st, really not knowing any of these characters.
We'd done research.
We had Kelly. Kelly was the only character that was in the pitch book, right?
That, yes. But we had archetypes of the other people.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted a handicapper. We wanted a professional better.
Now, someone just out there,
yes,
a handicapper. A handicapper is someone who breaks down what's going to happen in a game, but from a gambling perspective. So if you watch ESPN and an analyst is talking about a game, same thing, but from a gambling perspective, that's a handicapper.
Right.
But are they the ones that determine how much money you'll make based on like that?
They just say like, okay, when you watch a game and you hear about the favorite and the underdog, that comes from gambling. Mm-hmm. That's not something that's just made up by sports people. That is comes from Vegas setting a line, which team is favored by how many points. So,
and that changes as people are gambling, right?
Yes, it changes on the fly, kind of like stocks, who buys which side. And so a handicapper is someone who like talks about like if the Cowboys are favored to win by a touchdown, Kelly Stewart, a character in our series, will talk about whether you should bet on the side of whether they'll win by more than a touchdown mm-hmm. or less than a touchdown, mm-hmm. like that type of thing.
Right.
So anyway.
Right. And so we show up in Vegas and we have, you know, we're going to meet with Kelly. We want to meet with a professional bettor, mm-hmm. somebody who actually all they do is they make their living betting sports. And then we wanted to meet what's known as a tout. Mm-hmm. A tout is somebody who says, I'm so smart, I'm going to sell you a game for $500 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You pay me that $500 and I'll tell you, okay, it's Cowboys. You got to bet the Cowboys against the spread. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's wait, the
they
transaction. Just,
they're like a consultant?
Consultant.
Exactly.
So Vegas Dave is the tab, right?
Yeah, so Vegas yeah. Dave, more or less, as Bradley so eloquently put it, every series, every show, you got to have, like, it's nice to have a villain.
Sure.
Yeah. He's our complicated. Especially an ensemble, yeah. He's yeah. our complicated villain.
Yeah, yeah.
Without a doubt, he's a complicated villain. And we had sat down on Korean barbecue with this guy, and he's super fascinating, super interesting. The sports betting world hates him.
Yeah,
sure. And we wanted to know why, and is he misunderstood, and in what ways, and mm-hmm. shine an objective light on that. So we met with all these characters. We had drinks, breakfast, lunch, dinner, 3 days straight.
Speed dating.
Speed dating. Was Dave Check, our showrunner, put it.
Wait, so, sorry, Vegas Dave, you give him $500 and he tells you what bets to make?
Yes.
Yeah, some people may pay him $5,000 a week.
Yeah.
And it's how often do they win?
See, that's the thing. In the show, in episode one, he says he wins 75% of the time, right. which people in the show, like Cousin Sal's Jimmy Kimmel's cousin, and other people who are famous like Brent Musburger and other sports professionals say that's freaking impossible. You can only win, if you're a super professional, you can win 54 to 56%. There is no way to win more than that in the long run. And this guy says he has a gift from God from sports betting, which from a storytelling standpoint, we found fascinating.
So amazing. Good.
Yeah. Wait, but well, so you didn't run the statistics on it while you were with him?
So at the end of the show, episode four, we have a scorecard for everybody. Mm-hmm. Just get ready. You should watch episode three and four because it just goes on a dark carnival ride.
Oh, no.
And in episode four, it goes darker and darker with Dave.
Because I'll admit, I've only watched the first episode, mm-hmm. and everything seems pretty tame and happy. Like, no one's lost their home or, like...
Well, the end of the first episode, I mean, you definitely foreshadow.
Yeah, you know it's coming. So you know their lives are going to go...
Each topsy-turvy. Each episode, we want to make a theme. One is about the excitement.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much money to be made from sports gambling and all this.
Yeah. It's legal now, yeah.
It's legal. It's exciting. Two is about, hold up, people become addicted. People's lives can be ruined.
Cities have been ruined.
Atlantic City.
Atlantic City has been ruined by gambling, honestly.
And do people always win? You find out about Vegas Dave that... Has he always been a winner? You meet his parents who bailed him out of hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt.
And I just
don't want to ruin anything else. Four, you get into his legal troubles.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to tell us the theme of episode four?
So episode one is about the excitement. Two is about the cautionary tales, addiction, the dark side, the losses. Three is kind of a mixed bag, but we also go into fantasy sports. We find a kid who's 26 years old who makes millions of dollars betting sports on his computer. And we also, the playoffs arrive, so all of our characters are betting on the same game, which is fascinating because the camera's cutting to all of them.
Sure.
And villain cool. Vegas Dave goes against our professional bettor Crack in episode three. Mm-hmm. They're betting on the same game. And four arrives at the Super Bowl, which is the biggest betting spectacle in the world. And we have cameras in with all of our characters across like the different sports books in Atlantic City and Vegas. And they're all betting on the same game. And Vegas Dave goes all in a way he's never gone in before.
Oh no!
How's that?
Wait, and boy, so that how many crews do you have?
Oh, that was a good question. On that day, on the Super Bowl day, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes, yeah. five crews.
And a crew is like two camera people and a sound person and
single camera.
Yeah,
single camera for the whole show.
Oh really?
Yep.
Oh, and what's the logic behind that?
I like single camera.
Is that how you shot Delt too?
Yep. Single camera. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's never another camera in your shot. So there you go.
Yeah.
Always get on the eye line.
I was actually curious about watching. I watched it last night, the first episode. Like, in your mind, Luke, what makes like a good establishing shot? Like, how do you figure out Because, you know, I watched, like, there was a shot, like, where we cut to the casino, and there's, like, a guy cleaning the you know, the carpets.
There's also, there's also a great shot where you're at the casino, your home casino,
South Point.
South Point, thank you. Where they do, like, a guy drives by on a golf cart and, like, wipes the title. I was like, oh, that's fun. Like, those are the ways you get to kind of, like make a...
You just made my day.
Oh, good. I'm so happy.
But you ruined but like, Luke's day.
No. Luke loves that, too.
Yeah. No, it's so good. Oh, that's how you kind of jazz up a documentary. You know what I mean? It's those little flourishes.
Well, so one, the network on their first watch of episode one was like, so I love where you've taken us. You've taken us to the parts of Vegas that no one sees.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it is the parts no one sees. But you need to take us there after we've seen the part that everybody has seen.
Oh, interesting.
Sure. Which I thought was interesting. There was like all this flash of Vegas that actually wasn't in the first cut.
People are like, oh, I've been to Vegas. I don't recognize this.
They're like, let's see the sexy women and the lights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just went to the degenerate 8 miles off the strip. You've never...
You're making
where
a
the
TV
hell
show.
Am I? Yeah, right.
It's a bunch of 80-year-olds talking about the VIG or whatever.
Exactly right. It's exciting and interesting and weird. So I'll say this. The DP, Gabe, is amazing. He did Last Chance U. He's DP of that. And I remember watching that show. And there's something about when you do verite, you have to have a sense of... you have to be sensitive to the nuances of people and to find the quirkiness and to find the little details that no one sees and shoot something in a way that no one sees, but you don't have much time to do it. Mm-hmm. He does that. And so I had always been behind the camera a lot for the stuff I've done and behind the computer for the edit room. Mm-hmm. And I knew with this, I was going to touch neither. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I got to find a DP that like I just know is going to just knock it out of the park.
And practically, are you on a wireless monitor? Do you have a headset? Like, how are you communicating?
I have a monitor, and I'm just speaking to my IFB, and we can...
But you're next to him?
A distance away. Yeah. And, you know, it only took about 5 or 6 days until we were in the groove together. Mm-hmm. He has great instinct.
He's doing the thing before you were about to call
a lot of it. Yeah. He would just like know to get that shot or get that spot. And then it was to a point where it was like, I felt comfortable to be like, okay, get wide now. Okay. In a minute after you get this shot, hold it 2-3 seconds, get this tight of this, but I wouldn't micromanage. Mm-hmm. But there were some times where I'd be like, I know exactly what I want. I don't want to make sure. I want to make sure it's not missed.
Right.
And he appreciated that. And otherwise, it's just, you got to know when to let someone loose. Like, Gabe loves B-roll. Mm-hmm. He just gets off on it.
Yeah.
And so, like, these establishing shots you're talking about, like, I watched Last Chance U, and for those of you who have not seen it, watch it. He made roll parts of Alabama.
Mississippi.
Was it Mississippi?
Yeah.
Look incredible. Yeah. And just like, ooh, that's unique the way you shot that. I never saw it that way before. And so I would just turn him loose. I'd be like, every time we go to a new location, I'd make sure there was built in an hour of
Gabe
B-roll.
Time.
Oh, nice.
Just Gabe getting his rocks off and just be like, Gabe, B-roll time.
Yeah.
And I would watch what he's doing, but like, I knew he was just getting it, you know? Yeah. And he would see things in the scene. He'd see someone like really quirky, like as it goes on it gets even better, like people like watching the people were filming and he'd capture their reactions and I'd be like, we would laugh and I'd be like, this is great.
Yeah, there was Luke mentioned that he his wife was pregnant, she's since had the baby, but there was congrats.
Thank
Luke you. Little Levi, I met him last week, he's very cute. But there was one when his wife was more or less in the window, the 3 or 4 week window,
right.
Luke was just like very understandable. He was like, I'm not traveling for this shoot during that time. So it was more or less me and the showrunner directing. We were in Atlantic City and we were shooting. Atlantic City is a much different flavor than Vegas. It's a lot, I think it's cinematically a little bit more interesting because it's a lot more depressing. So we were shooting in this sports book and Gabe was just like, hey, I'm going to go get a couple establishing shots. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, just come back in like 15, 20 minutes. And he was gone for like 45 minutes. And I kept getting like, Gabe, where are you? Where are you? He's like, I'm getting good stuff. And then I finally run outside and I find him. And he's like, I found like the most insane little like inserts of like, so when you gamble, there's all these, you have these sports book tickets. Mm-hmm. And if you don't win, you discard the tickets. He found this like obscure alleyway behind the sports book, and he saw this old guy
picking up the tickets. Sure.
You see that in episode one, right?
Yeah. When he showed me, he's just like, watch this. I was just like, oh my gosh, dude.
Right. Because those are the shots that you need to build emotional beats. Yes. Right. But they're not obvious. It's not like, you know, like, well, I'm going to go be sad now.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about the establishing shots, too. I just saw a friend of ours just made a pilot with like a good budget and stuff. And I watched it and I was like, I think everything's good here, but I never get a sense of like where they are. We're just like inside buildings. And it's like, that's what I felt like action did so well, is it like introduces you to someone weird, but then just kind of, you know, and then you see them in action and then you kind of like get to breathe for a second. Or like there's like the shot of like the girls taking a selfie in front of like the Welcome to Vegas sign or something.
Yes, which is
like,
I love that. So
such it's so simple, but so nice, because it's like a shot about how people think they're supposed to like love
how
Las
they feel
Vegas.
About Vegas.
Yeah.
See, that's gay. I wasn't even around for that day. I mean, the truth is, something I learned a lot from making the show is that you don't have time to tell people what to do all the time in a show like this.
Especially when you've got five crews on a big day, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was insane. I didn't even meet the other four DPs.
Sure. Yeah.
I spoke to them on the phone for an hour.
Yeah.
And sent them episodes. And just watch episode four. When you get to episode four, just imagine those are... And it turned out freaking fantastic. Yeah. But like the big lesson was, even with editors, was just like, you can't be everywhere. Mm-hmm. You're not doing everything. Your job is directing. Bradley, you're producing. This is your job, right? Like, you need to find people, tell them what to do, empower them, give them a direction, and walk away.
Right.
And when you find the right people, just magic happens, especially when they latch on to the subject matter. Right. Like Gabe didn't even care about sports or anything, but he just loved the people and the atmosphere, and he just gets those big eyes, you know. Gabe's got it. Walk away.
I feel like Gabe's going to get a lot of jobs after this interview. Yeah, not that he probably already has a lot of jobs.
Well, you know, it's funny. I DP was huge. Yeah. Like, I was a little nervous. Like, I'm not going to touch the camera. This is...
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Because you were shooting beforehand.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Like, Verite is so difficult.
And you're never like, I'll just bring a second camera just in case something
I
see.
Well, I purposefully... We shot with the Amira, and I didn't even know how to
zoom
use
lens?
A Zoom, but a lot of primes. But I didn't know how to use the Amira. Mm-hmm. I purposefully was like, I was like, we could do the C300, but like, no, we're gonna use a camera. I can't even touch because I won't know how to even use it.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love the challenge of like, hired someone who's very talented, and now you're using an instrument that you can't possibly touch. Just trust the person. Yeah,
sure. Right. It's just like we edited on the Avid.
Right.
And Del was edited on Premiere, right?
Yeah.
And so it was like, I can't edit anyways. Yeah, but like Luke can edit, but the Avid is just like, it's a different...
Oh, when the editor goes to pee,
you can't like sit down and like noodle for a second.
I couldn't do anything. Yeah. I didn't touch an edit stroke, which is incredible.
And like, it didn't make you feel...
It made me like feel amazing.
Oh, really? You didn't feel like you... There must be something that you haven't...
See, like with Delt, I remember when I was telling Russell and Bradley, we're making Delt, and we had enough money to hire an editor. And I was like talking about this guy that we'd gotten a suggestion about in LA. His name's Derek Boonstra, and he's super talented. And they were like, Luke, are you going to be able to do it? Because like, they knew me. I'm a perfectionist, and I like to like get in there. But I was thrilled to find someone who I could tell from watching his work. It's like, he's better than me. I can't I can't do what this guy can do. And it was liberating. He was in LA. I was in Austin. So that gave me the courage to go.
Wait, this is on Action or on Delt?
That's on Delt. Yeah. So it gave me the courage going into Action to know, now you're going to hire six editors. You won't touch anything. Okay, you did that with Delt. Just find a camera guy who freaking takes it by the balls.
Right.
Who you've watched his stuff and gone, damn, that guy gets it, and just let him go.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Six editors for four episodes?
Six editors and three story producers.
Ooh, and what do the story producers do?
So just imagine this. We were delivering a rough cut of episode one 3.5 months after filming.
Right.
And we had not been in
no
the
edit. No characters.
And we had not been in the edit room for more than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like actually physically.
Yeah.
Before we were delivering that first cut to network.
It's so funny because like in narrative, the narrative world, that doesn't seem daunting at all.
Yeah, because you have a script.
But in the doc, it's like, I mean, I guess. What I'm getting is that it's really stressful.
Yeah. Our script was two cork boards that had note cards.
Right.
And,
oh, interesting. Yeah.
I'll pull it up.
It ended up being, I ended up falling in love with it. Because like our, the EP, one of the EPs of the show, Andrew Freed, like was like in one of our early meetings was like, we're going to, you know, you're going to fall in love with the corkboard.
Can you share that with us?
Yeah, yeah, we'll cool. send you that. We'll send you that
picture. Awesome. That'll be in the show notes, everyone. So you can check it out.
You know, I study structure. I alternate pretty much between screenwriting and doc filmmaking, and so I know structure. I know all the things. But we didn't really. We kind of did that with Delta a little bit, but not over four episodes. Not over 4 hours. And after about a couple weeks, I was honestly just in love with just like. Oh, let's get the board out. Let's get the board out. Let's move the cards. Let's like add another card. Let's color code them. Oh man, I'm not that OCD at all. Yeah. But like I got really into
got
it.
Got into it. That's so.
It
funny.
Was really fun.
Also, so you know how crazy the timeline is. Showtime had never done something like this, and neither had Boardwalk.
Wow.
Okay.
Like that time, you're saying
in that time frame, and our showrunner had done week deliverables where they do a season with a team, but you knew where it was going. You follow the team in practice, they're going to have a game, right. and you turn it around.
Right.
Like, and they would do it they'd start filming on Monday, deliver on a Sunday. It was insane, but like you knew what the story was. But we were doing something where...
You were working towards the Super Bowl, right?
So the season works towards the Super Bowl, but you didn't know each episode where it's not like ending on a game.
Yeah, it's not like we're betting on each football game until we get to the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And it's not...
Did you know your themes like when you pitched it?
No.
We knew that we wanted to be an episode to be about addiction, just because like that's
sure.
We knew journalistically, it would not be great if we made a 4-hour thing about sports gambling and we didn't talk about addiction. But that's
and then the black market. Like we had like contextual pods, we called them historical moments that we needed to include from a journalistic standpoint.
Right, right.
That was actually in the pitch. The pitch deck had 6 things in it.
Yeah,
we're gonna talk about this. But gotcha. In terms of like how each episode ends, I did a rough pitch in the room of episode 1. I actually don't remember how that ended.
Sure.
And it didn't end. It ended something with the bookie, I think. But I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it was rough. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they must know also that like you're going to find it a little bit.
Sure.
As it's going, right? Like it's not their first rodeo when it comes to documentary.
No.
So.
Yeah.
I'm curious because this show is so much more like character and story based. Than about like the visuals, like when you're pitching and when you're making this pitch deck, like what type of pictures do you put in that type of thing? Or do you not put any pictures?
Yeah, some pictures.
Like, do you talk to them about what it's going to look like or is that not really?
Nope. We did not talk about what it's going to look like. Not at all. There are visuals in there.
It had helped because I think Delt was a very visual piece, and especially in the way that Luke and Jake Hamilton, the DP of Delt, filmed like the card magic. So I think Showtime, Vinny, who was a big fan of Delt, knew that the show's probably going to look good, especially if you're shooting in Vegas and you're shooting Atlantic City. That's just, they're both cinematically interesting looking places.
Got lots of lights.
Lots of lights.
And Vinny did know, like, that the guy at Showtime, he did know, like, in the pitch room, he even said, I know, Luke, you won't have a problem with characters, but I want to know from a journalistic side, can you do this? Because, like, the thing is, the show actually tackles a little more journalism at certain points.
Sure. More than Delt, certainly.
Right? More than Delt. And it's appropriate because we're talking about a $500 billion illegal industry going legal. It's going to affect, if you're not even into sports, this is going to have a huge effect on the United States. Gigantic. And if you're into sports, it's going to change the way you watch it for the rest of your freaking life. So it is a big thing to talk about. So he was like, I just want to make sure we get that in there.
Right.
And that was actually the biggest challenge for us was how do we make sure and incorporate that? Because that's, characters come first to us. So.
Yeah.
So how have your lives changed? Like now you've got a Showtime show under your belt. Like, do you know what's next? Is it, you know, what's the next step for you both?
Luke was still editing on the 4th episode today.
Wait, are you serious?
Dude, this timeline's been insane. Yeah,
when does it come out?
4th episode comes out
in a week and a half.
10 days.
And you're cutting here in LA?
Yep. I do color and sound mix tomorrow.
Wow.
So as far as our life's changed, my life has changed because I stopped working on it 8 days ago. Like, so Congrats. I have a lot more free time now. But no, I mean, I'll let Luke answer that question.
Showtime's extremely excited. I think we exceeded their expectations, given the timeline. They knew we'd do something good, but they were like, quality is top notch. So hats off. You know, it is too early to say.
Are you guys looking at like ratings and things like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have not asked them for that. And I think the time will come where I will, but I don't want to ask that right now. All I know is the feedback from them is you knocked it out of the park, and that's all we want to hear right now.
Sure.
You know, ratings, the weird thing is HBO and Showtime are the last of the breed that actually broadcast something. It is fascinating.
I love it. Yeah.
Having something, what we do like, is having something weekly released.
Mm-hmm.
It actually like an event. Has more excitement. Yeah. And like,
you can get on Twitter and like check out what's going on.
I can get mad at trolls, which I've done like a couple times. Just a couple times.
Yeah, and they had TV commercials for this.
Yeah.
During NBA games. Sure. They just did NPR
with
yesterday.
With TuneIn, you know?
It's like what's going to... Oh, we did Previons. We've never done them before. Previously on for each episode.
It's really fun to edit those.
But just to show you the insane timeline, like we were delivering episode 2, and then we were like, hey, who's doing the previously ons? And like we looked back in the contracts and was like, I don't think anybody is unless we do it. And we're like, are you freaking kidding me? Yeah, like we don't have, like I'm literally finishing episode 4 tomorrow. Like we don't have time to this. And we found the time to edit previously ons. You know, just,
and whose call is it to have a previously on?
Ours, the production company and us. It's just like, do you want to do it or do you not want to? And with a serialized thing, you got to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially since there's a couple of characters that are only in one or two episodes. And so it's if there's an episode that they're not in and then you got to wait another week, it's nice to just go, hey, remember this guy? Sure. Remember this girl?
Like in episode 1, there's a guy who puts millions of dollars into a hotel, a casino in Atlantic City, having never been there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He doesn't appear again until episode 4, and there's a big payoff. But, like, we had to have a previous line to let you know what the hell happened. Yeah, who is this guy?
Remember this guy.
Remember this guy?
Sure.
Right. Because I've actually noticed there's an art to it. And I was actually kind of excited by the challenge after we decided to accept it, which I wasn't happy about. And then I was like, okay, maybe we should. But then we're like, let's look at our storyboard.
Yeah.
And we'd look back at this board, which I guess we're going to post online, and we'd go, oh, we're in 3. Okay, what do we need to show? And it was like, okay, it's not just what happened in 2. Like, we need to pull back something from 1. And 4 was like, oh, no, we go back to 1 and then 2 and then 3 here and then, like, how to frame it. And, but that was our showrunner helping us, too. He's like, don't worry, guys, I've done this. He actually wrote them out for us and
it was really
nailed
nice.
It. So, wow.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, actually, because I'm curious to know what a showrunner does in a documentary space like this. Is he boots on the ground? Is he out there with you guys? Or like, how does it work?
So I was actually worried about it too, because I was like, wait, am I not good enough? You know,
I got this.
But it's great. The showrunner makes sure it's a safety blanket for the network, that they know it's going to be delivered and that there's a person who's done this before who's going to shepherd it through. Now, they don't replace the director. They're not like someone who, in the narrative space, showrunner. But what they do is like, they just are that comfort and they're that wisdom. Mm-hmm. So like Dave Check for us was, helped us when we went out and casted all the characters. Right, Bradley?
Yeah. He's very good at selling the vision of the show. Just as Luca is, and I think just as I am too, but Dave just has that kind of gravitas. He's done a bunch of 30 for 30s. He's run the MLB Films Network department for 18 years. So when he sits down and says, I've done this, I've done that, I've done this, I've done that, sometimes I think the characters that we're talking to are a little bit more at ease. And then he had a couple connections within the sports world that helped us in the gambling world, that helped us here and there. He got us our first really big sports celebrity. He got us Russell Wilson, who will pop up in episode 3.
He found us our bookie.
Yeah, he found us our illegal bookie.
He knows a guy.
He knows a guy who knows a guy.
He knows a guy knows a guy.
And also,
I would say he has great wisdom in how do you do something this fast? And also, like when he and I were sitting down and just finding how to build out the team, he was like, I was like, okay, I had to hire a DP. I think it was actually 3 days, guys.
Yeah,
it wasn't 5, it was 3. I remember it was pretty stressful. And then it was like, and you got to find editors. immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, check, who do you have?
Yeah, yeah.
And he just sent me a list of editors. I was just a fantastic team. Like,
yeah, it
was
our editors were insane.
Lights out. So he brought that to the table.
And so who makes the cut first, you or the showrunner?
Who makes the actual cuts?
Like, so the editors are cutting and then you sit with them and...
Is it
like TV where you're like, you have a director's cut and then the showrunner does
Showrunner never, in this case, never has like their own cut. It's not like he supersedes anything. Mm-hmm. And he's also a very humble guy. He's never like one where it's, the network's like, well, we want to see what the showrunner says. Never like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He was just like, he would give his advice on things. He would watch cuts. He had great notes.
Whereas like in like scripted TV, there wouldn't be a, like, well, we want to see what the showrunner says because they're the only person talking to the network.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like the director's like on the next job already.
I was on the phone like with the network most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. And there'd be times where like Luke would be in the field for 5 or 6 days and I would be running the editing room. And then there would be a couple times where like Luke had to like stay in the editing room because we were on a tight deadline and the head of the network of Showtime was going to come in the next day to watch the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So me and Dave, the showrunner, were in the field directing and making sure everything was moving forward.
Right.
So it's very much a division of labor type of thing.
Yeah, that's well said. Total team effort. And just that in the end, the showrunner is just like in the doc world, you actually have to get to a certain level. And I don't even know, eventually maybe I'd want to do it, but you get to assume both roles.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a freaking lot. I'll just say that.
Kind of like a head coach who can every now and come in and then ball and like slam dunk it.
Yeah, but you get paid more if you want to do both. But like, I was actually doing some digging and found out that like, I knew somebody who like finally got to do like directing. I was a director and executive producer. You want to direct, EP, and show run? You're talking about like... Do you ever want to have a break in your life?
Sure.
Like, and then you get paid more, but like the stress. And I just think that this is a team sport.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if I'd ever want to even do that. Like, we would not have survived without our team. Like, if Bradley didn't do what he did, if Dave Check didn't do what he did, if every single editor, story producer, assistant, like, if we didn't have all hands on deck, we wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
So I'm just, in the end, I'm thankful Boardwalk was like, you got to have a showrunner.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, in the end, it wouldn't ever turn out to be the best thing ever.
Killer.
Yeah. So what's next?
We were just spitballing some ideas before we came here over dinner.
Yeah.
Are you serious for new shows?
Yeah.
I mean, what's your take on shows versus features?
I mean, TV's kind of the coolest right now.
That's one thing that is 100% the same, I think, in narrative and docu.
We are kind of in the golden age of docuseries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think there's just so many untold stories out there that can mold for a long form true life documentary series that I think there's a lot of great stuff out there. Luke's very passionate about narrative. I'm very passionate about narrative as well. I write a lot of screenplays as well. And so I think that and we treat all of our documentaries like they would be a movie, you know? So I think that's something that we're kind of batting back and forth a little bit, but, we are just trying to finish this one. So.
Yeah.
And are you at William Morris? Is that your,
no, I don't even have an agent. I just have a manager.
Is it, a correct guess to say that the number of, documentary companies is small enough that you can kind of just get to know them without having an agent?
No.
Is that not right?
Not no. without having... I would say you need an agent or a manager.
Interesting.
You need one of them. I mean, you can't just... No.
Yeah.
You can't just go
Meet them at South
no.
by.
No. No. It's not going to happen. I mean, the cool thing is, like, I got this manager after doing Delt. He got me another job, but then I ended up turning that job down for the one with Boardwalk that we made Action.
Gotcha.
But now he's opened up doors for other meetings that there's no way I would have got into even with making this show.
Sure.
But he was able to say, I got a client and now I got the meetings.
He's got a show at Showtime.
You got to have somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's a team thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Orin and I go back and forth on that.
What?
Just in terms of like how valuable that stuff can be. Do you know what I mean?
I would say that right after making, I've listened to some of y'all's discussion on this, actually. Mm-hmm. I'll weigh in on this,
great.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, of course.
After making Delt, I was like, I wrote out, like, I'm very goal oriented, so I have like all these goals that I write out, and I had a serious like for the and I was also with my wife and everything, like getting pregnant, so I had a bunch of goals, right?
Sure.
So I was like, okay, I will do this. I will have one big feature or series created this year, or I will have like four small things I'll do and one in development.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit the first one, which was incredible. But I was like, I also need one manager or one agent. So what happened was, like, after Delt, I actually had a few people reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like email and be like, you know, you want to meet up? And then I started asking friends, like, I asked Bradley about his manager at the time. So yeah, I asked him, asked other friends, like, who should I go to? Who should I meet with? And then I set up a bunch of meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And just was, like, by emailing people?
No, so some that had emailed me and right. some that I knew friends of friends.
So you'd be like, hey, you know,
hook yeah, me you, up with like, yeah, I just won yeah. South By.
Could you make an introduction?
Yeah, I had this film. It won an audience award, South By. You know, send it to them. Blah, blah, blah. And I had about six or five set up.
Okay, great. Yeah.
So like, cool. Be my friend, you know, see how this goes.
All in LA?
All in LA.
And you live in Austin.
I live in Austin. So I came out here. And I will say that like two of them went well.
Uh-huh.
And
what's the difference between a good meeting and a bad meeting for you?
Okay,
in this case?
So the difference was one of them, the guy was super green and I could see straight through it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm a salesman. I know how to sell stuff. Sure, and I sure. could tell he was selling me on something that I could just tell, okay, you're trying to sell me too hard. I'm nobody right now. Come on. Yeah. Right? Like, let's be real.
Sure.
Like, I just did something at a festival, but like, that's not like...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I wanted that person who was like, you know, hungry, mm-hmm. but savvy,
mm-hmm.
who had bigger clients than me,
mm-hmm.
who saw me as someone they could build upon.
Be in
saw
the middle.
Me as,
you don't
yeah,
want to be
that,
the,
I want to be middle.
You don't want to be the biggest fish in that pond yes. for sure.
And I was yeah. the big fish with this guy. It's like, not going to work. Another one, it just didn't work out personality wise. One of them was actually pretty good. Another guy, Jacob Perlin, it went well.
Oh, right.
Yeah, anonymous. It went sure. well.
Friend of the pod.
Or Oren's manager yeah. and Sam's.
And he just did a lot more comedy yeah. at the time. Sure. Yeah. And I was just like, I don't know. You
he
know?
Did just sell a big fancy documentary. Oh,
yeah. Well, now he's Jonathan. In a doc and he did a magic doc. So hats yeah. off to Perlin. Maybe he should manage me now.
Yeah.
But then I met this guy.
You know, you should write him. He's still taking
yeah,
submissions
if anyone
from
wants
the podcast.
Jacob to be the manager.
I remember he gave out his information. I've listened to this podcast. It's hilarious. But then I met this guy at like, what's that? The Soho House.
Sure.
Yeah. Right.
Sure, sure,
but the funny
sure.
thing about this one was he had emailed me and I totally forgot about it.
Wait, who's your manager?
Lowell Shapiro. Okay. So he emailed me out of the blue when Delt came out.
Okay.
And I just forgot about it. And then he emailed me back and I was like, hey, just checking in if you want to meet. And I read his email and it said, I was at a birthday party. Someone told me about your film. I went home and watched it at night. And I thought to myself, this is awesome, and I think you can do a lot more than just doc features. I think there's a bright future ahead of you type of thing. He's like, but just hit me up. He went out of his way to hit sure. me up. So I thought, okay. And then I met him at the Soho House. I thought, okay.
He knows Wait, how so to... you email him, and he's like, meet me at the Soho House.
No, I emailed back. I said, I'm interested. I'm meeting with a bunch of agents and managers. You know, play yeah, it freaking sure. cool, man. You're like dating somebody. Like, you got to play it cool.
Yeah.
And he's like, meet me at the Soho House. So I go there. And I'm like, okay, he knows how to do this. Mm-hmm. He knows how to do business.
Yeah.
So I go in, and what I loved about him the most is that he had a boutique company with a buddy of his. They started with the co-founder of UTA. I'm just giving him a huge plug right now.
Sure, yeah.
But and then they went out on their own, bought out that guy. Basically, if their clients don't make money, they don't make money. Mm-hmm. And I come from an entrepreneurial background, and I know that like when you work hard, like it means a lot. Every dollar means a lot.
Yeah.
He's not feeding off the nipple of sure. a big agency or managerial company.
Right.
If I don't make him money, he's either going to cut me loose or he's going to try and find a way to make money right from me. So we just did a short-term thing. And I will say this, although he didn't bring me Boardwalk,
mm-hmm.
he did a great job.
Sure.
Negotiating that deal.
Yeah, yeah. They pay
and
for themselves that way.
I did right. not have to be a part of it.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that paid off in spades.
Yeah.
So
yeah, someone else has to be a bulldog for you, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
I didn't have to do any of that. And it was wonderful to just like, they did the deal and I walk in the office and it's great.
And you get to be the cool guy like, hey, we're making a show. This
yes,
is so fun.
Oh,
together.
Man. Yeah. And
it's
then he's
the
going
art.
Around town
yeah.
opening doors and he's already set it up. So I don't know what's to come. I don't know. Maybe next time on the podcast, I'm be like, well, that didn't work out. But
don't trust the Shapiro.
It seems like okay right now, you know? Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. I think you need somebody.
Yeah.
Do you guys find in doing this podcast that you get a lot of like emails about like, how do I get an agent? How do I get a manager? Or is it more process? Like, what camera should I use?
We get it every once in a while, but I think we talk about it enough on the show that we don't get hit up too much. We do get emails about that Jacob episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We never get emails about what camera should I use. We don't really get a lot of technical.
We get some gear stuff, but we don't talk about it.
Well, we get like what mics to use for your podcast because I'm starting a podcast.
We've gotten a couple like, should I get a gimbal conversations? Just a few. But, you know, there's just so many other better resources for that. Like, we don't want to be in the like,
learn
how to build you know, Dana Dolly out of PVC pipe. That's not our brand. You know what I mean? Like, there are other awesome shows for that.
It kind of started, there were some questions like that in the beginning, but lately it's more story and how did you get it done? And
yeah.
I mean, our number one question by far, like 9 out of 10 questions
can I guess?
That we get. Yeah, you're going to guess right.
Should I move to LA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Still?
Still.
I mean, so should we talk to Luke about that?
Yeah, all eyes are on Luke.
Well, I think Luke can answer that question.
Yeah. Should Luke move to LA?
Okay, so I think you don't need to move to LA. Wow. I don't live in LA. I live in Austin. I will say this. The best talent is here and also New York. You need to come here. You need to get fired up and realize that, say you're the best person in your little town, it's like going to a karaoke bar and everybody telling you you're great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what?
Sure.
You're a tiny tadpole.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and you
maybe you are great too.
Yeah, but maybe you are great, but you need to know that there's always someone better than you. Come out to LA.
Yeah.
Come out to New York. That's why I would come out, is just like, get fired up, man. Yeah. Like, and look at the talent and look at the people you could work with. Look who can challenge you.
Yeah, yeah.
And find, and that's what makes you even better. So maybe you are badass. Come out here though and become even more badass.
Go toe to toe.
I do think though that it's challenging. I learned, and I'm still learning myself in this, is that making a series with a production company out here was really difficult because I don't live here and I was on the road a lot. Mm-hmm. So if you're not single, that becomes problematic. You're gone away from home. You're always on a plane. It takes a lot out of you. So my wife and I have actually talked about, like, if this becomes something that we need, that I'm here more than often, more than I'm not home, or more than I am home, then we will move here.
Yeah.
That's my simple answer on that.
Yeah. Yeah. How often would you say when you're not on a show that you're in Los Angeles? Like, how frequently do you come out?
Once every 8 weeks.
Wow.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say like twice a year or something.
Yeah. Once every 8 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That meetings.
Couch must be pretty nice, Bradley.
What airline do you use?
It's one of the best couches in the biz.
Dude, he's got a blow up mattress. Which I'm like 36. I'm like, or 30. What am I? 36. It's like, do I need to sleep on a blow up mattress? But it's cheap and it's affordable. And I get to sleep next to my best friends.
Sure. Well, and you don't have to think about whether or not you should come out or not. You know what I mean? Like, if all of a sudden it was like, well, you're staying at the W now and like, you know, you're coming every 8 weeks, all of a sudden that gets pretty expensive.
And it does.
And I made Luke sign a contract that if he stays with us, he has to hire me. So,
there you go.
You know.
Perfect.
And what about, do you ever do commercial stuff?
No, but I want to. I actually just had a meeting with my manager yesterday. I was like, I want to do commercial stuff.
Yeah.
I find it great. You know,
lifestyle stuff, like doc style stuff?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I think that something we learned from doing a series is that it's the same muscle.
Yeah.
It's not that different, but like I think that ultimately I just want to keep flexing that muscle and in a different way. I want to do a commercial. I want to do a music video.
Yeah.
I want to do a narrative. I want to just keep trying different things. I mean, Errol Morris, I've seen him do Chipotle commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, that, you know, I bet that was fun for him. He got paid a lot of money and he got a kick out of it.
Dude, he gets paid. He probably gets like $100,000 per day.
So
like, I think you always got to look at like, I know some of your listeners out there are like, well, all I do is commercials or all I do is this. But like, same time, like, people want to do that. So like, embrace that. Be thankful you can do that. Because I have never gotten hired to do a commercial.
Yeah.
I would love to do it. And no one's ever asked me to do it.
The muscles are all the same. Like, I do remember when Luke first reached out to me. This was 8 or 9 years ago. I had written a whole bunch of features, a whole bunch of shorts. I directed a bunch of shorts. never thought I would ever do anything in documentaries. I thought I would never, mm-hmm. I didn't really even like documentaries that much back then. And then,
well, they weren't good yet.
I know, that's right, because we hadn't started making them. No, but then he asked me to help him a little bit with one, and I was like, I don't know. And then he's like, I'll pay you, and we can go to the London. And I was like, I'm in. But I learned within like a couple of weeks, it's like it is the same. It's different exercises, same muscles. Mm-hmm. It feels like so if you've got good muscle buildup from like writing scripts and like just really getting nerdy in a story and screenplay structure, you can take those skills and really apply them to documentary filmmaking.
Well, we should probably wrap things up.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, let's hop into unpaid endorsements.
Yes. Unpaid endorsements. I will say this is not documentary related. It's my unpaid endorsement is I just finished watching the final season of Catastrophe Amazon. And
so good.
I'm a big fan of the show. If you don't know, it stars Rob Delaney and Sharon
Horgan.
Yeah. I'd watched the first three seasons and was just beyond head over heels with it. And then it took forever for the new season to come out. And then the new season came out and I watched the first episode and I was like, I loved it, but I was like, I have to rewatch all the seasons.
Oh, it's cool. Only, that's what I've been thinking about doing.
Well, it's great because it's only, each season six episodes.
This is all I needed. This is the incentive I need. I'm going to start from the beginning.
It's four seasons and they're only six episodes each. So it's 24 episodes, yeah. Which is usually a normal network season. And I watched it in like 3 days. And then I finally finished the last episode of the last season last night. And I was so moved because it's just such perfect writing married with performing, married with really great directing. Yeah. Flashy.
Yeah.
But I thought the finale, have you seen the finale yet?
I did, yeah, yeah.
It was gorgeous. The way they shot some of the beach stuff and the final scene kind of wrecked me.
I
can't stop thinking about
it. It's one of my very favorite TV shows of all time.
It's unbelievable.
I love it so much.
Yeah. I have not seen the final season, but right? Rob Delaney's like child passed away while they were making final season.
I thought it was in between.
I think that's why it took them a long time between season three and four to make it. And if you want to cry, he wrote a very long essay about losing his child. Because his child had, not to get super heavy, but his child had more or less cancer.
Cancer, yeah.
And he wrote this incredibly poignant article about like what that was. And he extensively praised the medical community in UK and how they helped him get through it. And you can kind of sense a little bit of that in the final season. It doesn't go that heavy into losing a child, but anyways, Catastrophe on Amazon, just amazing.
I'll piggyback off of Bradley.
Oh, there you go.
A great series, Succession.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll say what I love about it is a total tragedy, but it has great levity at the right moments. I have a hard time watching something like The Leftovers, great series. I had a hard time watching it because I felt like so dark at the end of every episode. I don't know if I can do the next.
Wait, and you don't feel that way about Succession?
No, because there's comedy. Kieran Culkin, man. They pepper it in. It's McKay, Will Ferrell.
You sure?
Our executive producers. It's got to be comedy. Kieran Culkin, brilliant casting. Most of the casting, you've seen maybe some of their faces, but you can't name their
familiar,
names.
Yeah, they're familiar, but
I think it's a great example of a brilliantly executed idea. You don't have to have a star. Mm-hmm. You have HBO, but I just thought the writing is impeccable. The comedy was perfectly timed. And I'll also say there are some characters they introduced. I was like, why the hell are they introducing this person? And by the fifth episode, I was like, oh my God, I love this character.
Yeah, I'm so team. Like the Greg. Craig. Yeah, yeah.
Greg. Craig. I don't know.
One of them always calls him Craig.
Anyway, that's my recommendation. Unpaid endorsement.
What do you guys have?
Well, this is a weird one, but do you guys have rugs in your house? They're pretty cool.
Yes, I have rugs.
You know, I don't actually have any rugs in my house.
I have three.
You should. So, I learned a lot of stuff from my wife, but a rug can really make like define an area mm-hmm. in a room.
Ties yeah. the room
and,
together.
And yeah. my office is down this hallway, like my home office. It's always been fine. I have like a little couch in there and like a big desk and my computer. And, you know, I've always kind of like enjoyed, there's a big window. I enjoyed working there. And I had kind of this weird kind of old round dirty rug. And, you know, it was fine being in there, but my wife just like bought this new rug for me, but it's like white and fluffy and it just like has totally changed my entire like really happiness level.
Love it.
Like both my wife and I are like, we like literally just, you have to walk through my office to get to our bedroom. Like we're like, we just like walking through this room all of a sudden.
Vibing on this rug.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think like if you're like in a weird rut, you just go to like Home Goods or rugs.com or you yeah. Rugs USA and just get like a,
the cure for writer's block.
Oh man.
Honestly, it's like, I almost like want to take you guys back there to look at it because it just like brightens the entire room.
Can I go back there after this? Or the kid's going to be woken
yeah.
up?
Yeah, she'll be woken up regardless.
Can we take a picture of the rug for the pod? for the show
next
notes?
To the storyboard we're
yeah.
posting?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I mean, it's not impressive. It's just like made me happy. And so I just think like, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about like how you get into your writing place.
Your stuff, space.
Yeah. It's just like made me want to be in my office.
And you know what the wrong move is? A small rug.
You gotta get a
I've
one.
Bought a small rug.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
It's a bad idea. And then the room looks bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can I throw one more just really quick thing on you?
You can't do two endorsements.
No. Very quick.
Yeah, you can.
Billions, mm-hmm. the show that comes on right after Action. Love that. First of all, I love Billions, but it's not about Billions. It's about the podcast that the co-creator of Billions does. Brian Koppelman, who co-created Billions, also co-wrote Rounders, Ocean's mm-hmm. 13.
And he had that Vine channel. Do you guys know about that?
No.
He'd give all these screenwriting tips we talked about on the podcast.
Yeah, so he does his own podcast now called The Moment.
Oh, and cool.
And it is so good. Huh. And at the very beginning of the year, literally the day before we were going to like start insane editing on Action, where it's just like January 2nd, and this is January 1, he did an episode, or he re-promoted an episode with Eric Heisscher, who wrote Arrival. Mm-hmm. And it was the most motivating hour of listening to two brilliant screenwriters talk about craft. And Eric Heisscher walked you through in such a approachable and profound way what it took for him to get Arrival made. Because Arrival, I thought, was such a good movie.
Sure.
But it was like an original. I mean, it wasn't original. It was based on a short story.
Sure, but still.
Like, can I read you the 4 points he made?
Oh, yeah. What are the 4 points?
When you're talking to executives from a network about notes, one, make them laugh.
Mm, great.
Two, make them feel heard. Mm. Three, don't treat them with a sense of awe or condescending.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, only take the notes which make the show better.
Really good. So check out Brian Koppelman, The Moment.
I just added it to my...
Yeah, and then specifically the episode with Eric Heisscher, I thought just blew my mind. But every episode, I think, is really good.
Anyways. That's exciting. Yeah.
If I had one tip to give Brian Koppelman, in his podcast episode names, he only has the names of the screenwriters, which means almost nothing to me. If he had the names of the things
of the
they
movies.
Wrote, I'd
yeah.
probably be, it'd be easier for me to figure out which one to listen to.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Oh, no problem. Okay. So my endorsement is a New York Times article, the title of which is Productivity Isn't About Time Management, It's About Attention Management.
Ooh, I have read that headline.
Well, read the article. It's pretty good. I just have been thinking a lot about the nature of how I approach productivity and I approach creativity and how, you know, I've had like a little bit of writer's block for a little while now in a way where I can focus on the, I can get the other small things done. I can get like the treatment done or like, you know, the work done, but like the big picture stuff, I'm working on a feature right now and it's been taking, longer to really get that momentum that I'm used to, you know, I've been just kind of meditating on it a little bit more frequently. And this, has some interesting points just about the way we fetishize productivity basically. And how, you know, that's just a thing I've been thinking about, basically. Mm-hmm. I think people keep asking themselves the question of, like, how do I get more done? Mm-hmm. And it's less about it's more about focus, basically. It's more about deep work, basically, than like
Than getting a lot done.
Than getting a lot done. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Genuinely though, like I think I've been suffering from having too much unstructured time for sure.
Yeah. My problem is I go to my office and instead of writing, I just like want to lay on my rug.
Oh, you love that rug.
So
dude,
puffy.
I gotta see this freaking rug. Dude.
Well, we shouldn't keep our guys from the rug, so
we want to find out more about Action, the show, or you guys. Do you guys tweet or anything?
Well, if you want to watch Action, tune in on Showtime or go
Sunday
on the app.
Sunday night,
and it'll be on the app forever. Yeah. So go check it out.
Yeah.
So episode 4 comes out at 8 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, April 14th.
That's the series finale, right?
Series finale.
And then you go back
or
and watch
season
all of them.
Finale.
Pardon me.
But the previously on is so good, you don't even have to watch the first 3.
Yeah, but I highly recommend going back because there's a guy named Vegas Dave that you just do not want to ruin it by watching episode 4. So
that's true.
Go back to 1.
Yeah.
I am not on social media.
That's right.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
I know.
So speaking of focus, I'm completely off of it. I've been off of it for 6 or 8 months now, so you cannot find me, but you can IMDb me.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, you just can't
find
me.
You don't have
a
website?
Nope. I don't even know. I might have one that expired.
Quorum Clan?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, if you want to ask Luke a question, you can tweet me at Bradley Jackson. Yeah, at Bradley Jackson on Twitter.
Well, if you want to find us, we're on social media everywhere. We're at Just Shoot It Pod, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I am on Twitter as at Smitey Pyleg and on Instagram at O'Kaplan.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow everywhere. This episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe. The producer is Madeline Rosewatt. And our webmaster is Ewan Williams.
And the music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazard. If you get a chance and can leave us an iTunes review, that would be awesome.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.